Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, Madman Machine Show 141, the first show of 2009. And just as a reminder, at the beginning of the year, Madman Machine was recognized by U.S. News and World Report as one of the top 10 investing podcasts, named by Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine as a must-read blog, and nominated three consecutive years at podcastawards.com. Thank you so much. Money Machine 141 2009. I know you're asking the question, who will the Mad Money Machine be brought to you by in the year 2009? Well, I'm proud to say the Mad Money Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Coming up on this episode, we will ask and answer the question, is there such a thing as Austrian investing? And we'll also look at the 2008 predictions scorecard and see how we did last year. Well, coming off the heels of last week's show, had to turn down the volume a little bit there, when I talked about the crashed computer, well, I did get the computer from eBay. It's an identical computer, fairly much. It's a Dell XPS, blah, blah, blah. And I simply took out the hard drive from my old computer, plugged it into the new computer, and it seems to work. Now, there are these little glitches. I just got done rebooting the machine because applications got locked up, and I have a feeling that there's some driver incompatibilities and things like that. So I guess maybe eventually I'll have to reload Windows from scratch to get the thing cleaned out properly. But I am working, and I'm very happy about that. Now I'm on the hunt for a new backup solution, which is something I actually wrote a blog posting about at madmoneymachine.com. I'm looking at the HP MediaSmart server. It's about a $700 machine that you put in your basement, hook it up to your Ethernet network, and copy stuff onto it, copy stuff off of it. It does Time Machine backups for your Macintosh, and apparently it also can do backup copies of itself off-site, say, for example, to Amazon S3. So I'm really looking at that solution. I think that's going to be a really neat solution. I'll feel a lot more comfortable with our data when it's backed up properly. Now, mentioning blog posting, so far I'm fulfilling my New Year's resolution in doing blog postings at madmoneymachine.com. I've done one every day so far in 2009. And that brings us to this week's tool from the Mad Money Machine Tool Crib. So what's the best way to read someone's blog? In my opinion, it's through a newsreader, supposing that they have an RSS feed enabled. You don't really need to know what RSS feed is, other than you see that little orange icon with three half-quarter concentric circles in it. That indicates that there is a news feed available. And the best way to read news feeds, in my opinion, so far, is Google Reader. You have to have a Gmail or a Google account, I think, in order to operate Google Reader. But what you can do then, if you've got a Google Reader account, you can go to madmoneymachine.com and click on the link to the news feed for Mad Money Machine, the feed. Or you can go into Google and say add subscription and actually type in madmoneymachine.com/feed. And from then on, every time you open Google Reader, you can see in there on the left-hand side, Mad Money Machine, and it will go bold if there are new items in there from the madmoneymachine.com website that you have not read yet. So I think it's a great way to read blog postings. I read it a whole lot more than I read newspapers. I've got a number of websites that I keep track of. For example, LouRockwell.com, AppleInsider.com, SurvivalBlog, But the unfortunate thing about all three of those websites is none of them, neither one of them, publish their full feed. In other words, the full story is not published in the actual feed that you can read in Google Reader. You have to click a link and go out to their website, where there are, of course, advertisements, or they keep track of site visits or whatever reason. They don't want you reading it in a news feeder, a news reader. I, on the other hand, publish full feeds, so you don't even need to visit the website if you're using Google Reader. That's this week's tool in the tool crib, Google Reader. And like other tools I've given you so far, it's free. So we got back home from our Christmas vacation and still had a week before things got all started. So one of the things we did during that down week is we went geocaching around our local neighborhood. Now, I've told you about the iPhone and the geocaching software that you can buy for it, and allows you to roam around and find the hidden treasures. We have found several treasures in our area. You go to geocaching.com and just type in your zip code and you'll see a map there of all the hidden treasures around near you. And you'll probably not be in Leesburg. So I'm going to tell you about one we found that was incredible. Out near in-between housing communities, there's a little creek, and there's some wooded area with not too many trees, just more grasses and things. Out also near an elementary school, we went looking. My GPS device gets me within 56 feet of accuracy, but it seems like it's actually a little bit more accurate than that, because it'll actually go down. At one point, we got it to within 3 feet of where the geocache is supposed to be hidden. Now, of course, a lot depends on the actual accuracy of the person putting it in to the database as well, and how accurate their GPS device is. But we looked and looked near this little creek. We looked in the evergreen trees. We looked in kind of the marsh area. We looked under rocks. We looked around the sidewalk. Now, the hint on this geocache was, why would they care? That was the hint. Why would they care? And you have to know that there was a sign just near the creek that said, "Caution, watch your step." And it was a permanent sign, like you'd see a stop sign at the end of a road. It had that kind of metal pole going into the ground, and had a metal sign on top, "Caution, watch your step," in yellow with black letters. And so I thought maybe it would be at the base of that sign, because the hint was, why would they care? Like, why would they care about "Caution, watch your step"? And we looked all around. We looked, like I say, under the trees, in the trees, turning up rocks, and just couldn't find it. After about a half an hour, we were all getting frustrated and said, let's just go. Can't find this one. And we'll report it to the database as not found. Well, I just couldn't give up. I went back to that sign again and looked at it a little more closely. And would you believe that the sign was a magnetic sign? And you pull the magnet off of the metal backplate, you know, like a magnet that you'd put on the side of your car, "Caution, watch your step." You pull that off, and back behind that was the log entries of people that have found that cache before. Incredible, a lot of fun. The title of the geocache there was "You Will Laugh," and boy, did we ever laugh. That was a lot of fun. If you haven't taken up geocaching yet, when the weather gets warm, get out your iPhone and buy a copy of Geocaching and get out and find them. So I did also at the website post the results of the Mad Money Machine Lazy Portfolio Smackdown 2008. I have indicated who the winners are out there in that blog posting. And I'll name them. Cosmo won in the low-risk category Ariel won in the medium risk category, the highly contested medium risk category. And Mudfud, who we've been talking about all year long, won in the high risk category. Now, nobody in the medium risk category had a positive return for the year. And so calculating the Sharpe ratio wasn't as straightforward as it normally is. Usually, when you calculate the Sharpe ratio, by the way, the Sharpe ratio is supposed to measure basically top leftedness. On this chart, you have the returns that you're getting along the left-hand side of the chart, and along the bottom of the chart, you have the risk, which is the standard deviation of the investment. How widely does the investment swing every week or month? You know, up and down. You basically want to look at investments that don't swing so widely and wildly for the amount of return that you're getting. So you want to be top left on the chart. You want to have low risk. You want to have high returns. Top left. That's what Sharpe ratio measures. Yeah, but except when everything's negative, the Sharpe ratio gets all wacky. And it kind of measures some other point, like bottom right or something. It goes crazy. And so I had to start at minus 50% with the Sharpe ratio, and it came out right that way, and it got Ariel as the winner. You can see it on the chart. If you just look at it, you can see, right there, top left, that's Ariel, the winner. And that is who won it. Now, none of these people have claimed their prize. Ariel says donate the book to a library. He's already read it. Well, that's great. Mudfud hasn't replied. Mudfud said, out at bogleheads.com, he said, yeah, I see that I'm the winner, and thanks for all the nice, quote, words that you said about me, because some of the things I said about him winning, I guess, weren't all that kind. I talked about... talked about how nobody would really put all of their net worth in a China Bear 2X fund with a standard deviation of 56.1% for the year. Wild swings in 2008. But if you did, you got 42.4% return in the year for your gamble. So congratulations to Mudfud. Now, Cosmo won the low-risk category. And guess what? Cosmo was the only entry that actually had low risk for 2008. And by low risk, I mean a standard deviation for the year between 0 and 8%. The only portfolio out of all of these that fell below 8% in standard deviation for the year was Cosmo. And Cosmo had one investment, one fund, put everything in the Vanguard Short-Term Bond Index, VBISX, which, you know, maybe that's not as crazy for all of your net worth, although I still wouldn't want to do that. But short-term bonds did work in 2008, and Cosmo had a return for the year of 5.1% investing in a short-term bond fund. That's crazy. That is crazy. Congratulations, Cosmo. I hope you will claim your prize. And we will keep following the lazy portfolios that we have in the database throughout the year 2009 as well. I'll look at the cumulative returns from the beginning of 2008, and I'll also start looking again at the year-to-date 2009 returns for each one of these portfolios. Maybe 2009 will be a winning year for equities, and we'll have a lot more fun talking about stocks. The Learning Earnings segment is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. And in this segment, we focus on the science, basically, behind investing. What is the proper way to invest? Now, I'll be drawing heavily on the book, 12-Step Program for Active Investors. I'll be drawing heavily on all of the data that's available out at Index Funds Advisors' website at ifa.com. And for the next 6 weeks, I'm going to be looking at IFA's investment principles. These are principles that we should follow, and these are principles that Index Funds Advisors has right there on their website in their About Us page. And last week we talked about the first one. Their first investment principle was capitalism works. Let's invest in it, basically. This week, number two, risk and return have a positive correlation. A positive correlation. What's correlation means? It means they're basically tied together. They, if you change one, the other one changes in a similar way. So, for example, if you take a lot of risk, you should expect a higher return in the long term. If you, on the other hand, reduce the amount of risk that you're taking, and by risk, again, we're measuring the standard deviation of the investment, how far it swings in a given time period. If you reduce the risk, you would expect your return to be reduced over the long term as well. And you have seen these charts, for example, at foliodex.com. Foliodex.com has these risk return charts of all the portfolios in the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown. Similarly, Index Funds Advisors has risk reward optimization charts, and I'll have a link directly to this. They look at not only their own index portfolios, Portfolio 5, the least risky, through Portfolio 100, the most risky. They also look at the individual asset classes that make up each portfolio, and they look at some other investments outside of Index Funds Advisors. For example, in the most recent quote of the week that Index Funds Advisors published, which, by the way, I'm the voice of, I hope you'll subscribe to it, they talk about the Bill Miller and the Legg Mason Value Trust mutual fund that he captained all these many years, and he beat the S&P 500 for 15 consecutive years up until from 91 to 2005. Ah, but then he fell on hard times. Well, getting back to the point, they plot on this risk reward optimization chart where the Legg Mason Value Trust fund falls. And it's amazing to see it. It has a higher risk than most. Well, no, it has higher risk than all of the index fund portfolios, and it also has lower return than most of the index funds portfolios. And so it is kind of bottom right on the chart. You don't want to be bottom right. You want to be top left. And in fact, if you connected a line between the IFA portfolios, 5, 10, 15, 20, all the way to 100, that's what some have called the efficient frontier. It's the point beyond which you can't really get further top or further left. All right? And that is the reason my logo on the website has this curve going from bottom left sort of to top right. That's what that curve represents. It's the risk versus reward correlation of the investments that we would expect. Now, on the chart, it does show things, for example, that have higher risk that also have had higher returns. For example, emerging market small cap or emerging market small cap value, they have higher risk. And they do, in fact, have higher return. But the idea is most people really can't afford to take that kind of risk way out beyond Index Portfolio 100. And the chart also shows where the S&P 500 itself lies on this spectrum of return versus risk. And it is, in fact, below that efficient frontier line charted by the index portfolios. I hope you'll take this to heart when you're investing, that you will understand the risk of the investment, because it makes all the difference in the world to your returns. Learning, earning. Are you learning? Brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. So I know I've talked about banking and loans and where does money come from in the past. And the question keeps coming up. Where does the money come from to pay off the interest on loans of bank-generated money? Right? Where does money come from? It comes from debt. When someone takes out a loan, the bank at that moment creates the money. But they don't create the money for the interest that you have to pay on the loan that you pay back to the bank, which is kind of weird. There's an article out at a website called Web of Debt. And I'll have a link to it. The article is entitled Borrowing from Peter to Pay Paul, which I've always liked that idea. The Wall Street Ponzi Scheme Called Fractional Reserve Banking by Ellen Brown, December 29th, 2008. And down in the bottom of the article, she has this, and I'll read it. In an article titled A Monetary System for the New Millennium, she's referring to this other article, Canadian money reform advocate Roger Langrick explains his concept in contemporary terms. He begins by illustrating the mathematical impossibility inherent in a system of bank-created money lent at interest. And here's the quote from this Roger Langrick. Imagine the first bank which prints and lends out $100. For its effort, it asks for the borrower to return $110 in 1 year. That is, it asks for 10% interest. Unwittingly, or maybe wittingly, the bank has created a mathematically impossible situation. The only way in which the borrower can return 110 of the bank's notes is if the bank prints and lends $10 more at 10% interest. The result of creating 100 and demanding 110 in return is that the collective borrowers of a nation are forever chasing a phantom which can never be caught. The mythical $10 that were never created. The debt, in fact, is unrepayable. Each time $100 is created for the nation's overall indebtedness to the system is increased by $110. The only solution at present is increased borrowing to cover the principal plus the interest of what has been borrowed. And then Ellen Brown cuts in and says, the better solution, says Langrick, is to allow the government to issue new debt-free dollars, to cover the interest charges not created by the banks as loans. And she quotes Langrick again. He says, instead of taxes, government would be empowered to create money for its own expenses up to the balance of the debt shortfall. Thus, if the banking industry created $100 in a year, the government would create $10, which it would use for its own expenses. Abraham Lincoln used this successfully when he created $500 million of greenbacks to fight the Civil War. Well, this is a complicated notion, and I'm sure the banksters have got it all figured out. Whether it's to their advantage solely or truly is a scheme that works for the benefit of all of humankind, I haven't figured out the answer yet, but I hope we do someday soon, and I hope we get it right. I have a Google Alerts set up for the phrase passive investing, and one of the interesting hits I got this week was an article actually out at Mises.org from Sterling Terrell, an article entitled, Is There Such a Thing as Austrian Investing? And I thought this was an interesting concept because I kind of believe in the Austrian school, in case you haven't recognized that yet. Last week we talked about Keynesian and how Keynesianism advocates the intervention of the government in behalf of the economy. I kind of think the free market is probably a better way, and I come about this from the bottoms up, by the way, dealing in software on the network and computer science. When you develop little atoms of information and these atoms aggregate to bigger chunks and those chunks aggregate to larger chunks, and it's kind of the battle of survival of the whichever software will win out best. Well, without having you don't need a centralized controller determining what software gets written where. You let competition between software products arise in the market. And I think that analogy applies to the economy as a whole. We don't need a central mechanism of deciding what's the best way to do things, especially as far as the economy goes. So I was interested in this article, naturally being interested in Austrian economics, naturally being interested in investing, which is the core, the kernel of this show. What is Austrian investing? So Sterling Terrell talks about conventional investing that falls into two categories. Either it can be passive or it could be active. Here's the kernel of the article, though. He says that, problematically, both of these methods address risk from the same perspective. Under each, there's a high probability that on a given day the portfolio will see a small return, and a very small probability that the portfolio will show a large return due to the unexpected. He says Austrians know that the future is uncertain, and the uncertain is just that, not knowable, not known, unforecastable. Rather than just diversifying and hoping for the best, or trying to predict the future with a crystal ball or with a regression or doing active management, why not use the fact that the future is uncertain as an investing strategy in and of itself? Develop an investing strategy that has, on any given day, a high probability of a small negative return, which is kind of weird if you think about it. You really want a high probability of a small negative return? But then he says, and a small probability of a very large positive return. Rather, typically, this idea is not original, and Nassim Nicholas Taleb of Empirica Lab is already doing exactly this. And he's the author, of course, of Fooled by Randomness and The Black Swan, which I guess I'm going to have to read it this year along with Human Action. He says, and I've talked about this before, Taleb makes his money only by buying options. On most days, the options expire worthless. On a few days, an unexpected shock is realized and the market moves wildly and large amounts of money are made. And I've heard Taleb talk about this idea before. He says, have most of your money invested in something almost risk-free. You know, put it in a money market, put it in a short-term bond fund, put most of your net worth in something with very little risk, and then take a little bit and put it in this crazy risky options strategy and gamble, and you should come out the winner over the long term. And I think we talked about in October how he made 60 times the value on some of those options that he had going short and things like that. But so I'm going to study the flaw in this and try to get back with you on why this approach, which the author calls Austrian investing, which I'm not sure I like that. Why would Austrian investing be something that works or not? Well, my time is drawing short on this show already. I guess I've talked too long about some of these subjects. One of the things I did want to get to was the predictions from 2008. What I'll do is go through this really quickly, then I'll post a more detailed response out at the website for you to read in your Google Reader. So number one, I said Cramer would write a book published on Tuesday, December 9th, 2008, entitled Jim Cramer's Mad Rules for Investing, and would be about how to select index funds and ETFs. It will go further than his current book, Stay Mad for Life, and he'll talk about index funds of the week on every show. Well, that did not happen. He didn't even write a book at all this year, as far as I can tell. But he does talk about index funds about once a week on his show. So I might give myself a tenth of a point for that one. Number two, Apple will release a tablet PC, blah, blah, blah. No. They did not. There's still talk about them doing it. There's increased speculation that in 2009 they will. I'm going to hold it for next year's predictions. Apple's tablet PC, you know, maybe 7 to 9 inch screen size. That's just a touch screen, maybe a big iPhone, if you can think of it that way. Number three, the stock market will surprise investors. One of the recently strong segments will exhibit significant weakness in 2008. That was certainly true. But then I said one of the recent laggards will show significant strength. And I can't think of a thing that showed strength in 2008. So maybe I get 3/4 of a point for that. Fourth one, whatever. Ron Paul will do better than expected. I think he thinks he did better than expected. So I'm going to give that one a true. Next one, commodities will be in vogue again. They were for a while, up until July, and then, boom, the bottom fell out. So I don't know whether to give myself a credit for that or not. Probably not. Next one was kind of silly. Ben Bernanke will resign. I realize now that he would never resign, no matter how poorly he did in his capacity of running the banksters. And so that's a bogus prediction. It'll be interesting to see, though, whether the incoming president would recommend a change. I guess he has the power to do that. He appoints the chairman of the Federal Reserve, but that's the only direct connection I think there is between the government and the Federal Reserve. Everything else is private. Next one, index funds will beat actively managed funds. And that one is true. The total stock market index beat 70% of the large cap funds out there. Next one, a one-stop shop ETF portfolio will appear that gives complete exposure to risk, reward, and diversification, and all for a low fee. It'll include all of the Smiler components, as well as some bonds, commodities, and even private equity, and perhaps some even selected shorts, short of a bear fund, I don't know. But that came true in the middle of the year, or early in the year, actually. Their ticker symbols are PTO and PAO, if you want to look those up. And I mentioned the one about David Beckham last week. That one came out wildly false, although I did say there that MLS would raise awareness of the sport by using other internationally popular players. And Columbus Crew's Shirletto was Player of the Year, and he did a fantastic job. Last one, Google will announce Google Wesk, What Everyone Should Know. And they already had a product called Knoll, K-N-O-L, for knowledge. And it really never did morph into this thing about what everyone should know. So I give myself an X for that. The last one was a bonus, and that was MadmanMachine.com podcast and blog will continue to innovate, expanding coverage into additional topics and media. And I think that one has rung true. I've been into additional topics, certainly. And I've been doing some videos out at YouTube, which reminds me to ask you, if you would, in iTunes, subscribe to the IFA, the Index Funds Advisors podcast. In there, embedded in that feed, they have their quote of the week. Now, they've been producing it in at least a couple of forms. They have the PDF file that you could read it. They have the audio version, which is yours truly reading that to you. So you can listen to that on your drive into work, their quote of the week. And I'm going to attempt to do a video of their quote of the week. I've been using Keynote on the MacBook to put together these Lawrence Lessig-style presentations, if you know what that is. So please subscribe to the Index Funds Advisors podcast in iTunes. You can just search for Index Funds Advisors, and it will come up. Hit the subscribe button. So I'll think about the predictions for 2009 and get them to you on the show next week. So I'd ask again that you sign up, subscribe to the MadMoneyMachine.com blog feed using Google Reader, and get me your feedback. Email it to me at feedback@MadMoneyMachine.com. Or another way is to go to a website called drop.io/MadMoneyMachine and type in your comment there. Leave media. You can even leave a voice message out there. Now, as a experiment, temporarily, I am re-enabling comments out at the MadMoneyMachine.com website. So if you read an article and you have a comment on it, you can hit the comments link right at the bottom of the article and type in your comment and let everybody read that. The reason I turned that off is because it wasn't used very much in the past and it was getting a lot of spam that I had to go in and thrash out. I haven't really figured out the usefulness of Twitter all that much, quite frankly, but I do have a twitter.com/madmoneymachine account, and you can at me there, and I may make some postings at twitter.com if I have important things that come up. You can call the voicemail line at 206-734-4763. I'm actually wondering whether I should spend the $60 that Skype is asking me in order to keep that phone number alive this year. Just not sure it's actually worth it. I'll let you know next week. In the meantime, this is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes Austrian investing to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday. Be right here on your iPod or your iPhone or on your computer even, because I'm going to be there for you. Give me your feedback. And also, another thing that you should do in between now and then is point your web browser. You've probably got either Internet Explorer, Firefox, Google Chrome, or perhaps even Safari as your web browser, I would guess. Up in that address bar area, type in ifa.com and hit the Enter key. It'll take you to their website, and you can read for yourself all the fantastic information. And oh, by the way, sign up with an account. Sign up for an account with them. If you're leaving your job, like, hey, I just did, you can roll out of your 401k plan into an IRA with them. And I highly recommend, by the way, rolling out of your 401k into an IRA. You'll have more control over it. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. So I'll see you next week. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. Once again, Happy New Year, everybody. Stay invested.